to see Tammy and Gloria begin to fight, circling each other, thrusting and parrying with their blades, with no concession. It was quite possible that the Amazons could injure or even kill each other, which was something he kept very much in mind as he stepped into the circle to contest Jess.
No holding back, Whitey, 'cause I won't.
Right.
They began to fight. Circling each other in slow, light steps, both parties drew their blades. Jess's Emerson was smaller than the leaf-bladed knife that Jack held easily in his palm, but it had a honed, sharp cutting edge on both sides, a refinement that Jess had obviously customized since taking possession of the blade. Jess fainted, and Jack moved to his left, all the while expecting her next move, which was to follow the feint with a thrust to her right, but should have taken the blade into the space now occupied by Jack's ribs. But the albino had already shifted direction and allowed the knife to pass harmlessly past his camo jacket, all the while preparing his own attack, which was to her left side, now defenseless. For so it seemed. Jack's blade came so close to her naked torso that it could almost have shaved the top layer of skin from between her second and third ribs.
Whoa!
Instead, it passed her, his momentum carrying him just forward enough for her to move in close and grip his arm with her free hand. The grip closed above the muscle and tendons just below his shoulder, Jess's small bony fingers gripping like iron bands.
I said no holding back, Whitey.
Jack felt his arm go dead and the pull of her body weight as she attempted to unbalance him and take him to the earth. She expected resistance, so Jack did the opposite. He pitched forward, knowing that the deadened arm would be useless, allowing himself to roll and bring Jess across his body as her own balance was lost, and she fell onto him. As she moved across him, Jack dug the heel of his combat boot into the dirt and pushed off the ground, his wiry muscles propelling his body so that he swung over on top of her, pinning her knife hand with his left knee and using his still-functioning arm to hold her other hand down. His right leg was diagonally across her body, pinning her to the ground.
Wasn't holding back.
Well, neat move, Whitey. How about we do that again, this time in slow-mo, and you show me just how it's done.
Jack became a regular part of training after that, Gloria observing him with a growing interest. Jack was a good teacher, and was also keen to learn from the women when they came up with techniques he hadn't encountered before. In between sessions, Gloria kept Jack more and more to herself, drawing from him stories of his youth in the Louisiana swamps and his travels across the Deathlands. He also told her of his wife, Christiana, and daughter Jenny, and the way they'd been chilled on his ranch while he was gone. Gloria found the young fighter fascinating, and it occurred to Mildred that this would cause problems, of which there were a growing number. When JB wasn't in consultation with Ryan, Doc, and Gloria, he'd been spending a lot of time with Margia, the tribe's armorer. A man whose life was preoccupation with the history and maintenance of blasters and weaponry, JB found the Gates Armory unique. Whenever he found the opportunity, JB voraciously read old pre-dark material about blasters and explosives, particularly Grens of all varieties. He was no great reader, but would struggle through any old texts that he found along the way. Since few had been made after pre-dark, any blasters that could be found were prized. There had been large stockpiles of U.S. Army hardware looted from redoubts and bases soon after the reemergence of some kind of life across the tattered remnants of the continent, but there were also museum piece blasters that had been taken from collections and restored to some kind of functionality. There were also those that seemed to come from nowhere, like the laser blasters that they'd found in the redoubt near Raw. Those hadn't been operational, but some examples obviously were, as they'd been used in the attack on the Companions by a raiding party shortly after they had left the redoubt. There were a real variety of Grens, both immediately pre-dark and also much older, that proliferated in sec forces all over. Most explosives that were in use were Plasex, but even these differed in composition and stability, and JB felt the need to study closely any he came across, lest he one day use the wrong fuse and timer at the wrong moment. The armory Margia maintained fascinated the man. The Amazon kept it in a tent to one side of the encampment and slept in a smaller tent that stood behind. The armory itself consisted of boxes and crates, in which were carried ammo and blasters, along with an array of greasing and cleaning materials that had been looted on their travels. Other boxes carried a supply of Grens and Plasex. Although JB was impressed by the way in which she and her team, consisting mainly of John and Pitor, but with a few other males contributing when time was at a premium, maintained the condition of the place, it was really the composition of it that fascinated him. For although there were a few rifles and machine blasters, some Lee-Enfield 303 rifles, a Sharps, a couple of Uzis, and some H&Ks, the vast majority of the armory consisted of hand blasters. The smaller guns were obviously better suited to both the average size of the Amazon warriors and also the way in which they carried them. It was the range that impressed JB. They were blasters from the early days of the American West through to the last days of pre-dark, as in the case of Gloria's personal preference, the Vortak. The armorer was curious as to Margia had assembled these weapons, obtained the ammo, and replaced worn parts, and how much she knew of the history of each's manufacture. For her part, Margie had never met anyone who had JB's depth of knowledge, and she quickly came to enjoy his company. So much so, in fact, that the wily blonde began to wonder if it might be possible to try to add the armorer to her staff permanently, and not just for his knowledge and expertise. The Amazon was without a male, and had other needs to be filled. So the woman decided to make things a little uncomfortable for Mildred. She'd seen that there was something between JB and Mildred, and if she were to achieve her twin goals of luring JB into armory and mating service, she would have to get the black woman out of the way. Completely oblivious to all this, JB eventually had told Margia all there was to know about Mildred, and what had happened since he'd known her. Now Margia began her plan of action. Margia's first moves were subtle. While seeming to go about her business, the blonde armorer happened upon Mildred while she was discussing medicine with Tammy and Christy. Casually, Margia dropped into the conversation a few of the facts she'd learned about Mildred's past, making passing references to her being a Freezy and that JB had been the source of her information. She also remarked on Mildred's medical status, questioning obliquely if a pre-dark doctor was really suited to coping in the Deathlands. When Margia left them, with a sly, satisfied grin to herself and leaving Mildred seething, Tammy watched the blonde Amazon retreat.
Watch her, Mildred. She knows her job, but resents the fact that she's just an armorer. And she has a temper that blows up on her, making her do rash things. Just don't let her get the upper hand.
Shit, Tammy, I'm nobody's fool.
Unfortunately, there was no way that Mildred could prevent Margia from gaining the upper hand with her next move. This came when the physician was engaging in target practice with Dean and Tammy. The use of blasters for practice was seen as a necessary evil, as it increased accuracy but at the expense of valuable ammo, so when it occurred, it became a highly competitive event. A small enclosure had been set up just outside the camp's boundaries. While the men dismantled the camp in order to begin the day's march, the women elected to begin shooting practice. An area of 300 yards was marked out in the dirt, and targets made of soft wood were placed at one end. For each group of shooters, a sheet was placed over the target to make the clusters of landed shots stand out more clearly. The group of women taking part divided themselves into seven pairs, 12 members of the gate, plus Christy and Mildred. The former had a nasty feeling that something was afoot as soon as she caught sight of Margia, and her hair tightened almost imperceptibly to her skull. She glanced across at Mildred and noticed that she was scowling.
Who's contesting?
Split into pairs as usual.
Jess checked her blaster, a 38 Smith & Wesson SPL Airweight M12 Snubby. She spun the cylinder to check that it was fully loaded, then clicked the cylinder back in place.
So who are you contesting, Mildred?
As we're outsiders, Christy and I are going to fire against each other. We don't want to intrude on your own.
Or you don't want to be beaten and shown up.
It's not a question of winning or losing. It's a matter of shooting straight, that's all. Out there, the only winner is whoever stays alive.
I'd say it's because you don't want competition.
You'd be wrong.
But walking away from the challenge wouldn't prove that simple. Of the gate Amazons who were clustered for the shooting, only Tammy had some idea of what Margie was doing and how she'd been behaving. The others took all that was said at face value, and as Margie wasn't the most popular member of the tribe, pressed Mildred into accepting the challenge she was trying to avoid.
Take her up on it, babe. She may keep the blasters, but believe me, she can't shoot them straight. You'll take her out, no trouble. Jess, what, Tammy?
Okay, bring it.
Fine. You and me shoot last. I've got to go to the armory real quick.
I don't like this, Christy. You take my place, because we've got uneven numbers now that she's butted in. I want to follow her, see if she's planning anything.
Right.
Tammy followed Margia at a distance. The blonde returned to the armory, where John and Peter were cleaning the machine blasters, a 3-day turnaround task that didn't take them long, but ensured that the sometimes delicate mechanisms hadn't suffered in transit between camps. JB was also there, using some of the cleaning materials and grease to work on his M4000. He looked up as Margia approached.
Hey, boy, you're at it early.
Just a small task, but one I don't want to put off.